You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
For this week's NL West podcast, we're looking at the top prospects in each organization. I am Allison Twitter from MLB.com. And for some of the top prospects, they are people that we've actually heard a lot about, such as the Diamondbacks' Archie Bradley, who is still looking to put together a full successful season in the big leagues. And then some of the other players who we've heard a lot about but we haven't seen much of because they're still young but very exciting, like the Rockies' Brendan Rodgers, who is a shortstop who was one of the top draft picks just last year. So that's a quick look at some of the top prospects in the NL West. Our MLB Pipeline folks have put out an extensive list, and we are going to move on a little bit from Corey Seager just because we've talked about him so much. There are obviously other prospects in the Dodgers organization that are very good. Number two prospect, Urias, left-handed pitcher. He is a fascinating study. He's 19 years old, but his ETA is this season, and you don't see those two things go together very often when you have a teenage player and the expectations to see the big leagues. So they've got to be pretty excited to see what he's going to be able to do this year.
Well, they are, but kind of getting back to your two kind of conflicting points, not only is he only 19, but he's been carefully managed, babied, you might say, up to this point, and he's never thrown more than 80 innings in a season. So they are going to have to be careful as far as how fast they move him. You don't go from 80 innings to 180 or 200 innings, which is what the major leagues are hoping for out of a quality starter. You don't make that leap in 1 year without really risking injury to the arm. So I think the biggest hurdle for him, aside from just the natural hurdle of graduating from minor league opposition to major league opposition, is how do they stretch out that arm so that he can compete over the course of a major league season. And he won't be on the team in the beginning of the season. That's why they went out and signed free agents like Kazmir and Maeda, so that they didn't have to rush him. But even at that, they still are going to have to manage his innings so that they can perhaps have him available in the second half on a major league end. And this is similar to the way they had to handle Kershaw at a similar age, but Kershaw actually had a greater foundation than Urias has at this point, from what I can tell. As far as confidence level, Urias feels he's ready, just as Kershaw did back then.
So you're thinking he starts the season in the minor leagues and just builds up innings, and I guess that would kind of maybe set things up for him to have to be shut down. Of course, I'm looking very far ahead of this, but, I mean, like you said, 80 innings. So, even if they brought him up to the big leagues, they'd still have to be really careful with him toward the end of the season.
Right, it's a tricky balancing act. You want him to get enough innings early on as he improves, but if you're going to hope that he's going to help you in the second half, you don't want him throwing too many innings in that first half. So there is going to be a tricky management as far as pushing him enough to where he continues to improve and builds up arm strength, and yet not use up all those innings at AAA when you might want them in August and September and maybe beyond in the major league. So like I said, it's really tricky because you're trying to do two things at once and they are in conflict. So while the fans are dying to see this guy up in the big leagues, and our pipeline lists him as the number one left-handed pitching prospect, I think really it's the age / innings on his arm that's going to be as much a determining factor of when he arrives and how much he pitches for the Dodgers as anything else.
Chris, let's talk about the number one prospect, Tyler Beede. He is a right-handed pitcher. His ETA to the big leagues is 2017, according to our MLB Pipeline folks, a 22-year-old. So seems to have a lot of promise. I know that there have been some kind of mixed reviews on him early on, but I guess they still see him as a possible future starter.
Yes. he looks extremely impressive, Allison. The one time I saw him pitch, I know it was only one appearance, so you know you can't think overboard on the one thing, but the one time. But he just looked, pitching against the big league club, an inning in an exhibition game, he looked very polished, had some great velocity, excellent life on his pitches. You know, this is all the stuff you want to see, poise, the good late movement on the deliveries. But apparently, if you look at his record, you know, he needs consistency. He needs experience, which is, you know, pretty much the story for a lot of these guys. I was just talking to one of the Giants coaches. I'm actually here at the ballpark now, trying to gather up some info. And, you know, we were talking about prospects, quote unquote, and he said, nobody in particular, but he said, you know, for him, you know, he really doesn't pay attention to these rankings. With all due respect to the people who make the rankings, he understands that you have to, you know, make those, you know, that there's a demand for those rankings, but nothing really means anything until you perform. So, you know, and that's the case with Tyler Beede. He'll have to climb up the ladder in the minors, and maybe he'll probably repeat at Richmond this year and try to improve on that 5-10 record he logged last year.
Yeah, so he had a 5.23 ERA in Richmond, which is not so wonderful. But of course, it's at Double A. So, but there's a lot of time to work through these things. We don't want to bury the guy right now. And of course, struggling with command is a very typical issue for a lot of young pitchers. So I've done a lot of these podcasts. I've talked to a lot of reporters about a lot of players, and the knock on a lot of them is just some struggles with command. He has to develop. He has to, you know, get. Just work on that area. The fact that Tyler Beede is also very tall works in his favor. The movement on his pitches, he's tough to hit, he's tough to pick up. So those are things that can work in his favor as he continues to progress.
Should work in his favor, but because he's tall, he also has a lot of moving parts. You know, I kind of saw the potential for that when I saw him pitch, and if he's not mechanically sound, bad things are going to happen. So, you know, it goes both ways. Being tall is great, but besides Randy Johnson, there's been a handful of guys, you know, 6'7" and above who played Major League Baseball, and let's face it, most of them did not excel. It's just tough to, you know, get everything together with your hitter, it's your swing. If you're a pitcher, it's your delivery. So it's tough to get all those things in sync. It's funny how they seem to work in sync in basketball, but it's a lot tougher in baseball. I guess because the movements are like a Swiss watch, not to sound corny, but you know, everything has to be coordinated and in place.
Yeah, the Giants, it's interesting because just a lot of the teams, certainly that I deal with regularly with these podcasts, and they're either rebuilding or they're trying to regroup or they're trying to figure out how to compete in division. Then on the other hand, you have the Giants who are just trying to win the World Series again. But so many of their players have come out of their system. I mean, this isn't a situation like with the knock on the Yankees. Oh, they just buy whoever they need. They certainly brought in players from the outside, but the Giants are really good at developing. So they've got something in their player development system that is working very well.
It's so ironic, Allison, because about 20 years ago, we'd have this same conversation, and we'd probably say, the Giants can't develop anybody.
Right.
They have nothing in their farm system. They have to go out and trade for everybody they, you know, need, and they need help. But things really changed when Peter McGowan, the previous, CEO, you know, finally threw his support behind the farm system, thereby enabling Brian Sabian, the general manager, to turn his scouts loose. And he brought aboard John Farr, who had a lot of success in other organizations, you know, with amateur drafting. John Farr had happened to establish a rapport with a young man named Buster Posey, you know, when Buster was in his early teens. And, you know, John followed him along and drafted him. They weren't scared to draft Tim Lincecum out of college, whereas a lot of teams were. And, you know, they hit with three consecutive number one draft picks, Lincecum, Bumgarner, and Posey. And I don't know how many other teams do that. I mean, they, even with number ones, It's a crapshoot. It really is. And these guys hit with three in a row. And that's why they went to the World Series. That's why they've been in the World Series. Now, they're still having trouble developing positions. You know, infielders, yes. Outfielders, no. They've had trouble developing a lot of, you know, some offensively potent outfielders. That's their that's the main item on the agenda that's left. That box has not been checked yet.
Yeah, that's funny because I'm looking at the top prospect list here on my computer screen, and I don't see any outfielders until number 13. So you're right; they probably do need to work on that a little bit. I do want to move on to the number 2 prospect, Christian Arroyo, who is a shortstop. So he's a first rounder in 2013. He is only 20 years old, and his ETA is 2017. But they're very high on him.
Very high.
But, yeah. So, have you seen him play, and what do you hear about him?
Like what I saw last spring training, and I think I saw some clips, you know, video clips from the Arizona Fall League. He just looked like he kept on maturing. You know, he's very sure of himself up at the plate. That's really I don't know how much I can elaborate. He just. He almost looks like he's ready for the big leagues right now. And, of course, he's not ready for the big leagues right now. It's going to take a while. But, you know, as he climbs up the ladder, he has shown the aptitude that he'll be able to raise his game to whatever level he occupies. The big thing with him is what position does he play? They had him playing shortstop. As you know, the Giants have a fairly good shortstop in Brandon Crawford, who they just gave a multi-year contract to. They love Joe Panik, who is, you know, World Series hero of 2014. Should come back from his back injury all right. So that does that cross out second base for Mr. Arroyo. Then third base, Matt Duffy, you know, Willie Mack Award winner, runner-up in the NL Rookie of the Year Award vote. He looks like he could be the third baseman for a long time. So just what position does Christian Arroyo play? Fortunately, that's not my problem.
Corey, first of all, before we delve into the top prospects, let's talk about a prospect minicamp that the Padres recently held in San Diego. So I guess some of the guys that we're talking about were participating in this camp. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, kind of a neat deal, Allison. They invited about 16 guys to Petco Park. Last week, some of their top prospects, some of the guys are going to be in big league camp and spring training for the first time this year. And it was kind of framed as a way to, not so much instruction oriented, but a way to, for the new staff, including manager Andy Green and his new coaching staff, almost all new coaching staff, to kind of get acclimated to these guys with the thinking that, you know, that first day of spring training arrives and you have 60-something people in the room there, and you have a lot going on, and I wouldn't say guys get lost, but it's hard to kind of give that one-on-one attention to guys during that time. And also, you know, this is a way for Andy Green and his staff and some of the front office people to set eyes on a few of these new guys that they've picked up during the off season. You know, they watch videos on these guys, but now they got a chance to for 3 days to look at them in person and get to know them a little bit. So, you know, there were some tangible benefits there, I think, and not just in the baseball sense, but also in relationship building.
Yeah, it's kind of like the first day of school in some ways when you get a spring training. And, you know, from the outside, it might look like everybody's, like, known each other for a long time. But really, it's very similar to kind of that first day of school. And it's nice when you have, like, facial recognition, when you feel like, you know, you might have spent a couple days. There's immediately, like, a warmer feeling just as far as just being around each other.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about it, you know, that first day comes and you're going to have guys like, we'll use Manuel Margot, their number one prospect, the outfielder they've received from the Red Sox. So he'll be sitting in a room with James Shields, Matt Kemp, you know, guys that with some serious big league tenure and service time. And it could be a little overwhelming experience. Let's not forget that, you know, some of these guys are 21, 22 years old and probably a little overwhelming for them. So I think this was done to kind of lessen some of the anxiety. I think it served to benefit both sides, both parties here, the front office, the coaching staff, and also the players. You know, it was 3 days. you know, some instructions, some drills, but really, you know, some candid conversations and getting to know these guys and just let them know that, hey, when spring training starts, yeah, we haven't forgot about you completely. You know, so they will feel a little bit more at ease with their situation.
Okay, so let's get into some of the prospects. Like you just mentioned, Manuel Margot, 21 years old. Our MLB pipeline folks have the ETA for the big leagues in 2017. Like you said, he came over as a big piece in the Kimbrel trade, probably the biggest piece, and immediately became the number one prospect for the Padres. So seems like he's got all the makings of a very, very solid major leaguer. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, you know, still a young guy with not a ton of minor league at-bats and plate appearances, and someone's still trying to figure it out offensively and defensively. But I think what, you know, has made him so attractive to, well, not just the Red Sox, certainly, but then the Padres to make a deal for him was, you know, sort of the upside and his tools that he has, the hit tool being pretty good. He's a good athlete. They think he'll be good in center field. You know, we got a big center field here in Petco Park and a lot of big outfields in the National League West. And, you know, I think he kind of fits the framework of guys they want to, you know, sign eventually and, you know, draft and develop athletic guys with big upsides who can help you out in a number of different ways. So, yeah, he needs some time. You know, we're not going to see him here for, excuse me, for at least a year or two, but there's no rush, so that's sort of the beauty of it.
I am joined by Mike Farron, who is the new Diamondbacks pre- and post-game host and also the host of Power Alley on Sirius XM MLB Network Radio. So Mike is filling in for Steve Gilbert this week. And Mike, you know, Steve and I have talked quite extensively about who's listed the number one prospect for the Diamondbacks, which is Archie Bradley. Obviously, he is no stranger to any of us because we've seen him pitch at the major league level. 23 years old. His star was very, very high a couple of years ago, and he's run into some issues, mainly with injuries and a really unfortunate getting hit in the head with a line drive last year, which scared everybody. So, but still, the Diamondbacks are pretty high on him, and they're really expecting him, I guess, to be in the rotation this year, I would think.
Well, yeah, at least at some point. I mean, you know, the signing of Greinke and the trade for Shelby Miller has, I think, to some degree, taken some of the pressure off Archie Bradley in that regard. And, you know, both Robbie Ray pitched pretty well last year, and Ruby De La Rosa giving nearly 190 innings. And it means that Bradley isn't the guy that they have to count on necessarily right as the season starts. But you're right about his prospect pedigree. I mean, I think he's been a famous prospect basically from the moment when he was drafted, you know, and turned down a chance to play college football at Oklahoma. I mean, he is an electric fastball that, you know, will run up into the high to mid 90s, and he will, you know, features a very, very good breaking ball. The changeup has been a work in progress. He added a little bit of a cutter slider in the fall league a couple of years ago that's helped him kind of get a third pitch. Now it's just about command and being able to throw good strikes consistently. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of the question is when that comes. Because at the very least, you have a guy who can profile at the back end of a bullpen. But if the command comes along, and as you said, Allison, he's, you know, 23, so he's still very young. If that comes along, then you have a chance to have a very, very good major league starting pitcher.
Yeah, because it's really, I mean, he had an elbow injury early on, then he had a shoulder problem after he got hit in the head with that line drive. So, there's some, you know, true health issues and some like really bad luck. And we were all kind of wondering how he was going to bounce back from that that line drive. And I guess we're still sort of waiting to see if he's going to be back full force. Do you think that like that takes an emotional toll on him, just having been through something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can for some people, but I think for Archie, I mean, this is a really, first of all, he's one of the most engaging young men you'll ever be around. And he's an extremely bright guy, and I think he has an idea of, you know, I certainly the dangers and the perils of pitching, but I also think that he's a pretty solid emotional base, and I think that's one of his great strengths. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, when he was drafted, when Kevin Towers was the general manager, that they really liked him because of that's part of his makeup and his character. And so, you know, I personally don't look at that as being a major concern with Archie, just because I think he's got the emotional wherewithal, the intestinal fortitude to be able to handle adversity, and I think he has the desire to get better, too. And that's, listen, you know, unfortunately it's been injury that's been the most recent adversity, but before that, when it was control issues, it was something that he tried to really work on to get better as a pitcher.
You know, that's a good point that you brought up, that with the additions to the rotation with these huge names, that it's going to bump some of these guys down just on the depth chart a little bit. But that could work in the favor of somebody who's had to deal with so much. Let's face it, the Diamondbacks are expected to compete in this division and really be, still be in it in September. It's been a very long time since they've had that situation, which is great for them. But it is kind of nice for to take some of the pressure off of these young guys and more ease them in and maybe just kind of hide them in the crowd a little bit while they try to get back on track.
Yeah, and I think it allows for more versatility, too, because even if it is for the short term, say late in the season or in the middle of the season, you know, Bradley is one of the better options for them in the bullpen. They could certainly use that. Remember last year in spring training, if he breaks camp, he'll break in the bullpen. And then was, you know, broke as a starter before the injuries hit. So I think that's, you know, it gives you depth, it gives you more options, it gives you more time to be patient with him and with Shipley and, you know, some of the other guys that there are in the system that are kind of in the high minors. And I think that it's nice to have options in that regard, and it's nice to know that you have this kind of potential weapon that if you get to the middle of the year and the starters are all humming along and you feel like you could use some help in the bullpen, but it's a really good way for him to get reacclimated to the big leagues and really, get kind of a big test is to use that fastball-curveball combination out of the pen. And we've seen countless numbers of starters who have done that early in their career who have gone on to have great success as starting pitchers.
Okay, so you brought him up. So Braden Shipley, coincidentally, he's the number two prospect on the Diamondbacks list. So let's, you know, I've not really spent a whole lot of time focusing on him, but he is, like you said, another one that they're going to try to maybe work into things. Now, he's 23 years old. His ETA to the big leagues is pretty much now, but it might be a little harder with some of the depth that they have right now. He's a former position player, former shortstop. He started pitching as a college sophomore. I find that fascinating. But he seems to have, from what our people are saying, he's got the stuff to be a decent number two or a very good three starter for a long period of time.
I am a huge fan of Shipley's, Allison, and you know, a lot of it is because what you mentioned. You know, in Nevada, he played shortstop there. He is a tremendous athlete, and I have a little bit of bias in that I really like fastball changeup guys. And the one thing about Shipley as he came out of college was he had a very, very good changeup right away. He's got good velocity, good movement on his fastball. But that fastball-changeup combo, I think, is really special. It's one of the reasons why I was like Kevin Gausman, as he was, you know, coming up through the Orioles system. And you know, even Marcus Stroman, I know he gets a lot of talk about his breaking ball, but a great changeup there. So you get a fastball-changeup college pitcher like that with that kind of athleticism, and then it becomes more about, but he's a little bit behind the curve learning because he was a two-way player in college. And as you mentioned, he's 23, so he's not that far removed from the draft. But I think he's got a chance, and maybe it's at the end of this season, maybe more likely it's in 2017 because of the depth, especially if the Diamondbacks do contend all season as is expected, that he gets a chance. But I think I'm with you, and I'm with the analysis from both John Mayo and Jim Callis. He could be a really good number three starter in the big leagues, and has that kind of athletic, durable build that makes you think he can consistently log 200 quality innings. He's a very, very exciting offense.
Thomas, before we get into the top prospects in the Rockies organization, let's talk a little bit about some news, some features that you're working on, and a feature coming up about a couple of starting pitchers that the Rockies hope will fit into the equation this year.
Yes, I'm actually trying to put together a feature on Jordan Lyles and Tyler Chatwood. Those are two pretty good arms, and if you look at their numbers, they pitch pretty well, including at Coors Field. But the problem is, for the last 2 years, they've been hurt. Chatwood blew out his MCL and had the Tommy John surgery a couple of seasons ago. But before that, his numbers really looked good at home. And Jordan Lyles, they got him in the trade with the Houston Astros for Dexter Fowler. He's actually pitched well, but he's had freak injuries the last 2 years. A couple seasons ago, he breaks his non-throwing hand, his left hand, covering the plate after a ball got away from Willian Rosario. And then last season, he had one of those turf toe type injuries that was just totally freakish, but no arm problems. He's never had an arm problem. So the Rockies, who have such a hard time getting pitching in here, it doesn't look like they're going to sign anyone. They still have some trade possibilities, but those two guys coming back off of injury, they're hoping that they make a huge difference. Everybody talked about them during the Fan Fest over the weekend.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're stating the obvious, obviously, but we're going to do it anyway. You can never have too much pitching, and so the Rockies need to stockpile as many options as they can possibly find right now, heading into spring training and trying to whittle that down before the season starts, because as we know, whoever makes the starting rotation, they're going to need at least four, five, six, seven guys on top of that to get through the season. You really can never have too many of these guys that you're talking about to go into a season.
That's true, but they're looking at Chetwood and Lyles not as kind of depth guys, but as guys to help lead the rotation with Jorge De La Rosa and Chad Bettis. Now, those guys have never done it over a full season. They've done it in small snippets, but let's face it, when you're the Colorado Rockies, what you need are guys who haven't done it before to come through for you, because it's not like you're going to go out and get Zach Greinke or Roger Clemens or Nolan Ryan or whoever it is. You really have to have guys that you think have potential to come through for you.
Okay, so let's move on to some players that we could see down the road a little bit from the top prospects in the organization. Of course, the number one prospect is Brendan Rodgers, who is a shortstop. His ETA to reach the big leagues is not until 2019, so we still have a couple years on him. Of course, he was the Rockies' first pick in the draft just last year, and really he was ranked number one of all the draft top 200 entering the draft. He was basically ranked as the top player. So there's all kinds of things to look forward to with him. It's just a matter of waiting it out. He's only 19, so we have to wait until he can really make an impact in the big league.
Yes, and I'll tell you, when I saw the video of him and even when I met him, he looked a lot like Troy Tulowitzki. Now, Tulowitzki was still here, but it was almost as if they drafted not just the eventual replacement, but someone to kind of appear as Troy Tulowitzki as his stunt double, I believe. But at the high school level, he was a man among boys. I mean, you saw him do some things at that level, and you saw the competition, and it just looked like this was a guy who was headed to pro ball, playing against guys who, you know, were hopefully getting a date for the prom. I mean, he was that much far and beyond his competition. But when he got to Grand Junction and playing amongst the men and everything, it was a very slow go for him. His high school team, I think, was eliminated pretty early in the season, and he spent most of his time getting ready for the draft. So he had some nagging injuries, didn't do great, although he did homer in his debut there. But you're looking at a guy that has all the tools. Defensively, he's one of the modern big shortstop type of guys, about 6 foot, 6 foot one, really a physical guy, and can hit for some power. Now, obviously, he's going to have to do it at the professional level, but having a full year to work out, and he works out with D. Gordon and a few other major leaguers, he's done that through high school. You're expecting him to go through some of the growing pains of living away from home, probably cooking his own meals or whatever you do in the minors for the first time. But once he gets the pro pace together, he could move really quickly. I mean, he deserved to be thought of as the most talented player in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, we say, you know, these ETAs are just generalities, of course. And when a player is taken out of high school, we generally give him 3 to 4 years to get to the big leagues. With college players, it's usually it's not quite that long. So, I mean, it could be 2018. There's no, hard number on him. And if he really shows a lot of promise, why couldn't he be in the big leagues at 21 years old? It's not like it's unheard of.
That's true. I mean, usually, especially with this team, I think you expect them around 23, 24. They tend to be late, except for the guys that really go through quickly. I mean, Nolan Arenado got up at, 21, 22 years old. That's part of the thought of picking your best high school player out there. Yeah, the college guy tends to get there quicker, But if the high school guy gets there quicker, he tends to have a longer career and tends to stay with his original team longer because it means he's a star and he signs another contract with you. So that's what you're looking for from Brendan Rodgers. I mean, he has a lot to place on a guy to get to the majors quickly and be a superstar when he gets here or a star-type player. But when you draft a guy that high in the draft and he's a high school guy, that's what you're hoping for. I mean, you're hoping for someone granted, the Carlos Correas don't grow on trees out there, but you're hoping for someone to have an impact like him when he does get here. The Rockies won't rush him, but when he does get here, will he have that type of impact like Arenado or like Correa has had in Houston?